Let's call the meeting to order. This is the July meeting for the Community Service District of Cambria. And our president, Funky Blue, is out of town this week, so I'll be sitting in for him. Would you all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Okay.
Pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Get a technician.
When the nutcase that comes in here with a gun, I'll be down.
Okay. We'll move ahead with the form of formalities that there is a quorum. We'll note that with one absent, Director Funky Blue. And Mr. Montandon, do you have a report from closed session?
We met at the last regularly scheduled meeting in closed session to discuss the items set forth on that meeting's agenda, and no final actions that require reporting were made at that meeting.
All right. Thank you very much. Then I'll ask my colleagues any changes for the agenda review. Do the agenda review. Excuse me. Any additions or deletions?
None from staff.
Nope. Seeing none, we'll move ahead. We actually have a pretty brief agenda today, so the meeting should go fast, I hope. All right, so moving to the acknowledgments and presentations. First one is a lovely person, Michelle Roost, from the Marine Sanctuary. Would you like to speak to us, please?
Good afternoon. Michelle Roost. I'm a resident of Cambria, and I'm the Southern Region Program Coordinator for the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. And I'm here to report that we have fulfilled a commitment to the CCSD that was made during the management plan development for what used to be the East-West Ranch and is now the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. During the management plan development process with RRM, we committed to providing signage for the ranch, interpretive signage, and Ben Boer, the ranch manager, is holding up one of those signs right now.
Marks where the boundary is located. We also committed to another sign on tide pool etiquette, and that is positioned right next to the southern boundary sign, and that provides information about treating our tide pools gently and respectfully. So it's taken a long time. I believe a three-year process is finally complete. These are the first two signs installed that the Sanctuary is providing to a number of our partners in the southern region of the Sanctuary. 12 signs will be installed on State Parks property in the next week or two. You'll see a number of those on Moonstone Drive and at Hearst State Beach. And we also provided two signs to the Bureau of Land Management for them to post at the Piedras Blancas Light Station. So we're quite happy. It's been a long process, and the fruition is here. The proof is here. Also, I'd like to invite the board and the members of Cambria to celebrate the one-year anniversary of the Coastal Discovery Center at San Simeon Bay. As you are probably aware, we opened the facility a year ago. It's an environmental education facility that's cooperatively operated by State Parks and the Sanctuary Program. And we'll be having an Oceans Fair this Saturday, July 28th, from 11 to 3. Lots of exhibits and booths, music from the Wave Hogs, food from Bodine's Tacos, and lots of fun for everyone. So we hope to see you there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate it very much. And I'll certainly try to be there. Any comments for anybody? Okay.
I think we should just encourage people to go visit, particularly if you've got, say, young children visiting, to go take them up to the exhibit, because that's a kid-friendly place.
Yeah. That sounds like a good idea. Okay. Thank you. Then the next presentation is a presentation to the Citizens Committee for Recreation, and I understand that the Chair, Julia Rice, will not be here today, but Director Chaldicott will read it, at any rate, into the record for us. Oh, sorry.
Oops. I guess the first thing I should ask is, are any members of the Citizens Recreation Committee here today? because we'd like to recognize them. Right. Let me read this then. Whereas the CCSD Board of Directors appointed a Citizens Recreation Committee in July 06 to assess and evaluate recreational services in the Cambria community and to make recommendations to the Board of Directors for future action, June 28th regular meeting, and whereas the report provided youth recreational program history for toddlers through teens, highlighted the YMCA and CYAA sports program involvement with youth programs in Cambria, and discussed model programs implemented by the City of Morro Bay and Templeton CSD. And whereas the Recreation Committee of the Parks, Rec, and Open Space Pros Commission will consider within its recreation program objectives implementation of recommendations made by the Citizens Recreation Committee, and whereas the CCSD wishes to express its sincere gratitude and appreciation for the dedicated and diligent work by the Citizens Recreation Committee, now therefore by virtue of the authority vested in the President and on behalf of the Board of Directors and staff of the Cambria Community Services District, I hereby extend to the Cambria Citizens Recreation Committee on this day, the 26th of July, our sincere appreciation of the entire Cambria community, the staff, employees of the CSD, for the exemplary and the distinguished community service. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Whoops. Thank you very much. Any comments or? Okay. Thank you. Then the next thing is. In terms of presentations, is the from the Chamber of Commerce. I'm Marianne is here. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Marianne Carson. I'm the Executive Director of the Cambria Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here to tell you about the Gateway Monument Project. The Cambria Chamber has agreed to be the local agency to work with the Scenic Byways Program on a Gateway Monuments for Cambria. A grant was received by the Slough County Council of Governments. That's the entity that facilitates transportation for the county, and from the National Scenic Byways Program for construction of gateway monuments in the area between San Luis and San Simeon. Each community will have autonomy and responsibility on the design, the public outreach, and the environmental permitting for their individual monuments. Now, the Chamber has published a request for designs from the public in its newsletter, and also it's been twice, thanks to Kathy, in the Cambrian. The deadline for design ideas has been extended to August 17th. That will give people who are interested more time to respond, and otherwise the project is on track and will probably be finished in the fall of 2008, coming events. There is leeway on the spending. It's an $80,000 grant. You could have one $80,000 gateway monument or two, one at each end, for $40,000 each. And the Chamber of Commerce is particularly excited to have this because at the north end of town, there really isn't anything that is particularly enticing or inviting for drivers coming from the north to enter the town. So, you know, the function of the Chamber of Commerce is for the businesses to get together and enhance the economic vitality of the community. Of course, the visitors coming to town is part of our main economic vitality. So if we had a gateway monument up, especially on the north end of town, beckoning them in, that certainly would be a boon for our economy. If you know of anybody who would be interested and has a good design idea for these gateway monuments, please have them just contact the Chamber, and we'll be glad to be looking at that. We will be making decisions, and we definitely want public input. So thank you. Are there any questions?
What was the deadline date again, Marianne, for the design ideas?
August 17th for designs.
Okay. And you hope to have it completed by the end of 08?
That's right. Fall. Should be fall. Installed by the fall of 2008.
That's great.
Thank you.
I appreciate that you're taking that on and doing it. So thank you for coming to tell us about it today.
Thanks.
Thank you, Marianne. The last unposted acknowledgement or presentation is I'd like to to honor an artist, Pat Haskell, who took the time to immortalize this board by this item, which will now hang in the district office. It'll be presented to the general manager, and she may hang it anywhere she wants. I thought she did a remarkable job of getting our likenesses, and particularly the halos, of course. So, any rate, thank you.
We should add that we prefer to hang together rather than hang separately.
I think, too, everybody should know that Joan paid for it out of her own pocket.
Oh, so. Yes. Right. Well, it wasn't you. District money. Yes. Well, you're all welcome for it, to that. Any rate, it's been fun, and I thought Pat might be here today, but we'll make sure.
There. So I'm around on my weekends and on my off time. So in keeping with your spirit of a short meeting today, it's fairly brief. I met with staff yesterday from CCSD regarding some vandalism and some petty theft and other items, some drinking on or around CCSD property this last week. I informed them that we had taken at least one person into custody. Some of the names I couldn't mention due to the fact that they're juveniles. Staff has been advised and is passing that along to other people to watch your guys' property as far as drinking, underage drinking, and things that are happening on or about town. This incident happened to happen on CCSD property. Also, with the vandalism to your vehicle several months back, we discussed some options there as far as making sure that doesn't happen again. Some citations were issued to some of the juveniles, and parents were contacted, and we're hoping that that seems to stem that activity for a while. Today, we're getting 8 new deputies assigned to the department. They'll be entering the academy here shortly. And we have 7 in the program currently, so by year's end we should have 15 new deputies on the street. That leaves us right about where we should be with attrition, retirements, promotions, things like that. There's some upward movement right now within the department, so we're looking forward to having them out on the street and getting them into the field training program. Calls for service over the last month have been on average, no spikes or increases. And then the last thing is 4th of July was smooth as ever. Crowds were down, being that it was on a Wednesday. We had no major incidents. Cayucas was about half of what it normally is. I was just discussing with some of the other staff members regarding fires not being allowed on the beach anymore with the Rangers and the fire department assisting and enforcing those rules. It really stemmed the crowds. So. Any questions, concerns, anything I can take care of for you?
Yes, do you think, do you want to give us some, or give the rest of us some advice about keeping our cars safe as far as vandalism and theft and so on?
Well, the vandalism, there's not really much you can do unless you keep it in a garage. The thefts, though, the two things that we have a lot of, and including the county has gone to this, is locking gas caps with the price of gasoline right now. I know working the lake, we've had people going out at night stealing gas from boats, because they don't have locking gas caps. So that's, with gas getting up over $3 and sometimes up near $4, that's a big thing. Second thing is just to lock your car. The most common one we have here in Cambria is people are out at night and they just walk along and just try doors. And you would be amazed at how many people say, but I live in Cambria, Deputy Steve, but I never lock my
door. And now you're at a lake and, wow, a lot of interesting assignments. Okay, that takes care of the special reports, and unless anybody has any other comments, we'll move to the staff reports.
Okay, thank you. Under General Manager's report this month, I'm reminding folks and the board who, in case you have constituents asking you about the family surcharge relief applications, that we're asking that those be submitted by the end of business at the CCSD Administrative Offices Friday, August 31st. We're attempting to electronically code as many of the accounts who are eligible for family relief based upon the completion of this application, and that way it makes it easier prior to the billing on September 10th, and we won't have to make any adjustments. So we're doing the very best we can, and we appreciate everyone who's already submitted those, and they do need to be complete, or else we usually call and let them know that they need to get those applications back into us.
Could I clarify just a moment?
Sure.
Are you allowing people to retroactively ask for relief, or?
No.
Okay.
No.
So
the policy doesn't allow for that. So they have to get it in before the bill due date.
Okay.
So what we're trying to attempt to do is to get them all, as many as we can, so that we can code them and they go out properly
you know, for those who are actually entitled to the family relief. It makes it easier for us.
So once the bill is out, it's too late to get changed?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and if those who are interested for an application, to call 927-6223, or they can visit the CCSD website at www.cambriacsd.org. The application is translated into Spanish as well as an English format on both the web and in our office. Reminding everyone that Mission Country's Fall Trash and Recycling and Greenways Cleanup is scheduled for the week of September 17th, so that's September 17th through 21st. During that week, the CCSD residential customers are eligible to put out curbside any additional trash or recycling or green waste, and that's on our regular pickup day, and there's no additional charge. Of course, any bulky items such as furniture or mattresses or large appliances need to be coordinated for pickup with Mission Country, and there is a nominal charge. Please contact Mission Country Disposal at 805-927-4995 for additional information. Again, the fall cleanup is scheduled for September 17th through 21st. And we have the a report from the CCSD, actually just one little item from the CCSD-CCHD Co-location Ad Hoc Committee. As a result of Don Melendi's retirement as their administrator effective June 30th, as you will recall, first of all, I guess I should remind folks, actually, since he's retired, and I did attend their meeting on Tuesday evening, and it seemed to be well received by the three trustees who were there that evening. I told them I'd be working with the ad hoc committee on a draft proposal. We meet in a couple of weeks, and we'll see how the different board members feel about that. I believe that there's some potential cost savings for obviously salaries and benefits involving myself and Chief Putney and Assistant Fire Chief Miller, who are qualified to be able to administer operations there, and me with the administrative and management oversight. And then there are some cost efficiencies with regard to purchasing and office lease spacing and utilities, et cetera. So we want to work on it. I think we're probably all carrying around a little bit in our head. And once we get it down on paper and have an opportunity to discuss it, we'd like to bring it back, obviously, to our respective boards and see how you all feel about it. So, lastly, under General Manager's report, we wanted to provide a local coastal plan update. As you recall, last month we had our comments that we were going to submit, and we appreciate the input by this board and the community. Your staff worked some really extended hours that week at the Coastal Commission here in San Luis Obispo, but I also want to acknowledge that several of you participated along with us, namely Greg Sanders, Peter Chaldicott, and Joan actually showed up as well. They were very long days. We worked very closely with our Coastal Commission advocate, Dave Nish, and his son, Dave Nish Jr. Art Montand and our district council put together a really, really good pamphlet that we were able to speak to each and every commissioner. We had an opportunity at one point or another, except for a couple of them, and who don't do ex partes. And it was really helpful to be able to show them graphically what we needed and what was able to be discussed. So I want to thank Art for that, and Bob Gressens for his technical experience, and then obviously Bob Putney for showing up. And then obviously there were other staff members who helped us put the thing together and hold down the fort. So I really do appreciate for that very long week that we were able to provide the community with that support. Of course, I can't forget that we had some really extraordinary assistance from Supervisors Cacho Shajian and Bruce Gibson. They were amazing, and they were with us each and every step of the way, as well as Slo County Planning and Development staff and then Coastal staff. So it was really a very busy and popping time that week, but I feel like what we ended up getting that Art's going to summarize is going to be beneficial for our community in the long run. So I'll turn it over to Art and let him kind of go over briefly what was discussed.
Thank you. There were four items that we talked about at the last. The changes were, and Greg, if I'm incorrect, please correct me, but if I remember correctly, generally speaking, the projects that would trigger this requirement were limited by our negotiated language to only those projects that actually impact the creek. And then also the study, the scope of the study or the area of the study would be limited to only those areas of the creek that we impact. The net effect of that is that since our wells are toward the very end of San Simeon Creek, if it was a project that affected the pumping regime or something of that nature, then we'd only have to study that length from those wells to the ocean. And that is significant because for any environmental review where we impact the creeks, we would conduct a similar type of study or analysis on the impact of the creeks. We really weren't given anything, much of anything more than what we would have to do anyway. The second was the rezone of the property where the dog park currently sits. And actually, we sat down and attempted to negotiate this. I was approached at a field trip by one of the Coastal Commission staff to discuss it, but we couldn't enter into an agreement on the terms of how that would be done. We had wanted to rezone it from multifamily residential to public facility, which would allow us to continue the park operation and possibly put a building for CCSD purposes on. And so we went directly to the Coastal Commission with our request as we submitted, and it was unanimous that we prevailed in that, and that was due to the efforts of a lot of the people that Tammy's already mentioned. The third item was involved the 50-foot setback where we hope to put in our test wells at the mouth of San Simeon Creek. People hear that term a lot of times and believe it's something really significant on the beach, but in actuality, I believe it's only two pipes, and if I get the diameter wrong, Bob, correct me, they're 4 inches in diameter, he shows you the size. They'll be buried underground. Bob recently got an opinion from probably the nation's best expert on beach erosion that states that the plan that we set forth will not impact the beach erosion whatsoever to the point where they'll ever be exposed during the duration of our project. Our project is a duration of, was it 1 year?
2 years.
2 years, and we won't be out there every day doing work. We'll only periodically go out and do a pump test to determine the viability of that site. And at the end of that, we've committed, it was our opinion that we would no longer be subject to that law because it'd be outside the jurisdiction of the county. We talked with the county and Coastal Commission staff about this also, and we agreed to withdraw our request because planning staff was a little concerned too, because we were talking about changes within the urban reserve line, and the change we proposed was outside, and they said they would like to address it later. We withdrew this request because the Coastal Commission staff told us in a meeting and stated that they would again say it at the public meeting that Bob's efforts to move it a few feet does take it out of the jurisdiction of the county land use law. It's still within the jurisdiction of the permitting of the Coastal Commission, but this provision that stopped us before will no longer be a barrier for them to consider it. The final item, which in some ways became the most controversial, was the cell tower that's been planned on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve for approximately 8 years. There were people that came forward that testified that this was inappropriate. We had a number of our citizens, including representatives from the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch, support the cell tower. Bob Putney was very good about explaining the safety need for this particular type of tower. Despite that effort, it was viewed by Cacho, I can never say his last name correctly, like Tammy Ashajian, that if he brought forward a motion to get this amendment that we wanted, that it would not be successful. And rather than fight it that day at that level, we chose, but based on his lead, not to do that. So what that means to the cell tower site is that because the application is already in process, it won't be impacted by this change in law. That one can go forward. And if it meets the requirements and satisfies the concerns raised at the commission, then it should be approved. I believe Tammy attended the Planning Commission meeting where it was heard this morning. I don't know the status of that, but that's the last item. And we didn't prevail, but the game's not over on it.
And I had to leave before they took the vote this morning, obviously, to get back for this meeting. There were a couple of motions made by Planning Commissioner Sarah Christie that died for lack of second with regard to not proceeding with the project in light of the new regulations that would take effect after the Board of Supervisors might approve the entire plan later this year. And then she made an attempt to have it continued until after that. Turns out, obviously, Art's correct, and there are differences of opinion amongst the planning commissioners as to whether it can legally proceed. So we'll see how it goes. I made comments on behalf of the CCSD only to the effects so that the facts were clear that the project along with having been in the planning stages for 7 years, has been mentioned and is in the improved East-West Ranch Management Plan, the conservation easement, the attachments thereto, and the mitigated negative declaration for the East-West Ranch Management Plan. And there has been endorsement not only by the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, who were previously the North Coast Swap, but also all of the other conservancy agencies who were donors for the property, including the California Coastal Conservancy. So I made those statements so that they were clear and there was no confusion as to it primarily being led by the CCSD. The reason that we're on the permit application, obviously, is because we own the property. And Sprint Nextel, the authority for the planning purposes, is delegated to them for the project. So we'll report back after we hear what happens.
And I have one other statement. I only went through the four issues that we were pursuing at this meeting on behalf of the board. There was another issue raised by Green Space, and that was the use of the community park. As you know, that's been planned for many years. It's in the management plan, I believe, also, and it's zoned for recreational, active recreational use. They submitted a letter, and their executive director stood up and spoke against the active recreation on the park, trying to stop the playing fields and those types of things. No one at the commission picked up and carried that forward with any motion, so the park can still go forward as planned.
Thank you. I, for one, certainly appreciate both the Director Chalicott and Sanders' effort, as well as staff. I as eyewitness to the stress and strain that went on, and thank you all for doing that. I wonder if you want to make any further comment. The fact that we now have an LCP approved, I know the North Coast Advisory Council was happy to finally have it in place, but in the larger sense, does it assist us as we move towards our alternative water source? And you know, why are we happy to have this?
Well, this is good to have because it sets in place what the rules are that we can start adjusting our plans to follow. There still is work to do. As we talked about the test wells, there's also the issue is whether we can, since this is a part of the general plan, that's the first thing that's normally adopted, then the ordinance changes that follow that will come forward, and I don't know when that's on the Coastal Commission agenda, but that's another thing that we'll have to follow also.
And our wish or desire to have more workforce housing, and will the new plan facilitate or help us in that endeavor?
Well, the proposals by the Coastal Commission staff limited our opportunities to develop it with the wide variety of water meters that we issue. Mm-hmm. And our discussions with them at the very beginning, we didn't know when we came back last time that they were going to make the changes we requested. Mm-hmm. And basically what it's down to is county staff, coastal staff, and our staff will sit down and discuss how it can be implemented. I think the ball's in our court, actually, to put together some sort of proposal for them to consider as it fits into the new LCP. But it is now capable. We are now able to do it.
Thank you. Are there other comments?
I'd like to have a question. Just for, I think for probably for the public as well, about when in time there was the agreement with the county as to the use of the park on the East Ranch?
I believe it's something like 1999, the year 2000. It's actually signed before I started here, so that's that I believe. The county, as you know, and for the benefit of the public, donated $500,000 to purchase that land. That land has never been dedicated open space. It's always been planned for the park. And there's some, I hear misconceptions in the public myself. People ask me that we donated money for open space forever. And what wasn't specific, or maybe they wasn't clear at the time, was that money went to purchase the 400-plus acres of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. None of it went to purchase this piece of property for the community park. That money came from the county, and the money from the county is specifically designated for park purposes. It's developer fees that can only be spent for parkland purposes. And so we're obligated, based on our agreement, to build the park.
Well, I'd like to, out of the transcript, maybe I'd be interested to hear the arguments proposed by Green Space at this late date with all that background history. They just wake up some morning and decided it ought to be something else. The issue, the sheriff's deputies have pointed out the rash of juvenile behavior over the year. I grew up in a desert town, and we have to find your own activities. They sometimes seem to be more well, if there isn't anything else is for teens to do, they'll find a way to entertain themselves. And I think that should be put into perspective. I mean, we've got a lot of teenagers and younger children, and they've got the only venue for their activities is the in the summertime is using the fields on both two schools, and that's dedicated to is almost over the top in terms of the demand, but that doesn't cover the teens.
No, and it's only out of the kindness of the school district and its board that those fields are able to be used. They actually lose money on the maintenance, but they understand the issue and come forward and allow those leagues to use those fields. And there are very few other places. I mean, you see on the front page of today's Cambrian a picture of my daughter, of course, but she runs the YMCA program, and the only place they can go in the afternoon is Shamo Park, and they're sharing it with the soccer players and the people that come and visit the beach, and it's not the best place for children to be running around since you can't control the people around you, but it's the only place they can go.
Well, I'd like to ask the Green Space to explain their rationale for this action.
Are there comments on the coastal plan? Are they, sorry.
Yeah. I would just like to say that I thought that the number of people from Cambria that were there who were kind of cheering this program on was very good. And it was interesting. They went back way before Shirley Bianca was a supervisor, and she was glad to see the plan going through. And I think that everybody that had read it were glad that this was coming to fruition. And it's really like our life was on hold until it was passed, and I think we're now hopefully going to start in advance. Good. Thank you.
If we're done on that subject, I was just going to comment on the issue involving the Cambria Community Health. Peter Chaldicott and I, along with Greg Bates, representing the healthcare district, have been working on plans to try and essentially consolidate the services that our fire department and the healthcare district provide. There are some exciting efficiencies that can be brought to bear if the paramedic program were to be brought under the umbrella of the Cambria Fire Department. And this proposal that the general manager is going to be putting together would be a step in that direction. So it's not just the Cambria Community Services District going out looking for something else to do. There is some thought that this would lead ultimately to consolidation of the paramedic program in Cambria with all of the efficiencies that can be brought to bear. Would be a very good thing for the community. Thank you.
I guess we should add also that the Board of Trustees from the Health District, as far as they're concerned, there would be no change. They would still be managing they're managing the funds base, which is the most important.
That's part. Right.
So
they would continue to exist.
Yeah, they would have no change other than that the person they asked to do the work is somebody different. Yeah.
And haven't we been working towards cross-training both staff, so they're both work in both areas?
Yes, many of the many of our firemen, many of the paramedics are already cross-trained. Some work for both agencies, and so it's a possibility of a match made in heaven, so to speak. This would, as the general manager described, help to bring the two agencies together and ultimately We would hope that we could find a way that the entire paramedic program could be consolidated under our fire department.
Thank you. I'm glad you added that. I was going to ask if you would, and that's great. Okay.
And one last comment under General Manager Report. I did receive the phone call I was waiting on from Slo County staff on that cell tower item from this morning before the Planning Commission.
Tammy, we had one speaker that wanted to comment on this last thing.
Okay.
Jerry McKinnon. Sorry, Tammy.
Good afternoon. Jerry McKinnon, Cambria. I'm curious about this amalgamation of health.
Continue to exist as a separate legal entity. So to the extent that Measure A funds are paid into the healthcare district coffers, the trustees of the healthcare district will continue to manage those funds. And essentially, under one scenario, they would contract with the Cambria Community Services District to have the fire department administer the paramedic program and bring all of the employees together under one roof, so to speak. So the net result should be that there's more bang for the buck for those who are paying property taxes into the healthcare district and paying the assessments that were approved by Measure A.
Thank you for that. I know that there's still a long way to go before this becomes to fruition. It's an idea, and it seems to have a lot of merit. The ad hoc committee's been working on it for about a year, thinking of all the various aspects of it. So stay tuned, and I will keep you posted as to what happens. Thank you.
No. Okay, so the phone call was that the matter for the cell tower on the West Ranch was continued to September 13th. The Planning Commission meeting is on a Thursday, September 13th, for those who might be interested in attending. Under the Parks and Recreation Department, the Pros Commission met on Tuesday, July 10th, and their next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, August 7th at 10 a.m. in our CCSD Suite 204. Is anyone here from the Pros Commission? I didn't verify before I left. Okay, well, not to report. I will announce that the second concert in the park is scheduled for this Sunday, July 29th at Shamwell Park. It features the Central Coast Rhythm and Blues All-Stars as the featured band. It is, of course, free of charge, sponsored by the CCSD, and then the Slo County Supervisor Bruce Gibson he granted us funds in order to pay the Slo County Parks and Rec Department for the park fees. Everyone, of course, is welcome to attend, and this series of concerts in the park continue this summer and fall. Three more are planned for Sundays. Those dates are August 26th, September 23rd, and October 28th, and the concert starts at 2 o'clock. And that's all for Parks and Rec and General Manager.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Were there any comments?
The latest modifications that were adopted July 11th by the Coastal Commission action, so we're in the middle of going through that and making sure we're dotting our I's and crossing our T's on those points. So that's the current work on that. On the Pine Knolls replacement project, I know Brian's report will have better pictures and so forth on that. I just want to give you a heads up that we did approve a change order number 2 on that for $4,196.06, and that was to relocate a sewer lateral that was coming out of the Peterson residence on Manor Way and was in conflict with a buried pipe in her front yard. So we did do that. It was one of those change orders we had to make a field decision because there was a crew standing there losing time on the project. That added about one day of work to the schedule, which made their officially approved schedule have a completion time of August 22nd of 2007, which is not too far away. However, I noticed in their recent schedule update that they submit every month or two, they had an October 2nd, 2007 estimated completion time. So if that's the case, they may get in the middle of some liquidated damages unless they can do something along the line, or unless there's other changes that come up between now and then that they can justify. So that's where that's at, and I would just say, I know Brian's report's going to cover other points, so I won't get into that. As far as the desalination project, We received a letter requesting additional information from the Coastal Commission on July 18th, and that's what we're right in the middle of doing right now in developing a response to that letter. I'm not sure if we'll make it onto the August agenda with any transmittal. That August Coastal Commission meeting in San Francisco is scheduled to be August 8th through 10th. If we miss that, we would certainly want to be on the September 5th to 7th agenda in Eureka to give us lead time to start our work right after the snowy plover nesting season, which ends mid-September.
What would affect whether we're on it or not? How, is it just something the Coastal Commission will decide, or is there something we can do to make it on the August agenda?
Well, I guess it's a combination of both. They mm-hmm. they have to be satisfied with the information mm-hmm. that's sent to them, and they weigh things like their workload and so forth, and public review times and that.
I see.
And we can urge them to have it on there, yeah. so we're okay. not traveling all the way to Eureka,
yeah.
if that's if that is the case. I just lease approved from State Lands Commission. That was during your board meeting in June, where I was in Sacramento on that, and that was a good experience to go through. I thought they were pretty pragmatic in their review of our application and our dealings with us. So that went well. Moving on to the Rodeo Grounds Pump Station Replacement and Stewart Street Tank Enhancement Project, RFP right now is working on the CEQA clearance document for that, and we're having more strategy discussions with them. But that's the design is pretty much on hold until we get through the CEQA process and we respond to whatever happens to come up out of that public review and some of the regulatory reviews that'll follow. So that, and it was very nice, by the way, to have that change made in the recent coastal LCP amendment, particularly for the community-wide plan that allowed the replacement pump station to go into recreation category. That was very critical to this project. So I echo what Tammy said earlier about Commissioner or Supervisor Sajian and Supervisor Gibson. They really helped us out a lot on that. So that was very helpful. Lastly, the one I'm excited about the most is,
okay.
is AB 946. I don't usually talk about assembly bills and being all excited as an engineer, but this one really was great. I mean, what this does is it allows you to have your renewable power separate from where your load is at. So usually, in order to get some net metering back on renewable power like solar panels, you have to have it contiguous with your load or your source of electrical demand. This can separate it now for public agencies, which gives us a great deal of flexibility on where these can be placed, how these can be partnered up, and so forth. And I have a lot of ideas on this. It's in alignment with what we actually proposed a couple of years ago on a Prop 50 application that went nowhere. So I'm just really excited about this. It ties into also what Director Chaldicott mentioned two or three months ago about AB 32. There's going to be mandated reductions in greenhouse gas emissions coming up. So this gives us much more flexibility in addressing that in the future. Now, you'll probably be hearing more from me about this. It's just, I love this kind of stuff. So, okay.
So nice to see you so happy.
Yeah, I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Oh, man, what makes an engineer happy? Good legislation. Any questions of the district engineer? The red face right now at Pat Haskell. Thank you, Pat. It was thought it was good, and the charity was a good cause, too. So thank you. Sanders. All right. Now, shall we move on to the utility managers, Brian Bodie? Did you have any comments?
All right. I'll get Carlos to put it up there. Dead air. I'll just go to some a few little items that aren't in the report. And just to let you know that we had the California Conservation Corps, with the help of Bruce Boniface and his incredible crew, do some hand clearing of brush out in the well field, spray field area on San Simeon Creek Road for give us some passage through there for a pipeline to Warren's property for reclaimed water. And there's a lot of archaeological possibilities in that area, so we had to clear it by hand and not put equipment in there. And later, I think maybe tomorrow, we'll have the archaeologists in there to take a look at the setup, see if we can get a passage through there. There's a lot of historical and archaeological things in the way, so it's hard to get over to his property. Anyway, we want to do the right thing, and so we're being real careful with it. But the CCCs did a wonderful job. They were fast and quick and very good crew, and about I think 2/3 of them were first day on the job. And their initiation was they hit a yellow jacket's nest, and a lot of them got stung. One of them got 6 stingers in the face, and so they had a good initiation for first day on the job. But they all took it in stride and did a good job. I want to thank them for that again. We've got also out in the field, we have the Wright brothers doing manhole and valve raising out on Main Street. County paved over a bunch of manholes and valves there, and we're bringing them up to grade. We're also using them out at the wastewater plant to help us with the slab on the biosolids project, and they've been helping with that, and I've got some pictures on that in a bit. Also in the back, I've got a deal from the Tri-Counties Fish Team and Fish and Game. It's a California Coastal Streams Creek Care Guide, and it's a good little pamphlet. There's a pile of them on the back, and I'll leave some up at the office, too, so if somebody wants them in the future. But they pipes, and if they used and the lead, and some of them used lead solder in the past, and if our water's too aggressive, it can take the lead and copper out. So far, we've been good on that, but we have to test for it anyway, and so those are out. Right here, this is Farashi Creek fish barrier or fish ladder, and you can see it's going down. It's just a neat little picture, but I've been watching that about every day, and it's the water that falls down into our well field on Santa Rosa, and it's amazing that you would think it would just keep dwindling as the summer goes along, but it doesn't. It cycles, it oscillates. I'm watching the watercress, and it will completely flood the watercress at times and go down to where it's about half as wide as that is right now. And that's due to a lot of the pumping that's going on up above, and it happens at different times. There's lots of agriculture going up above, so a lot of use of the water. And just want to remind people that last June, they used about five more acre feet than we did last year, and that's a huge amount. And we can't do it. We can't do that in July or August or September. We need to really, really cut back. Hmm. This is Santa Rosa Creek 2 days ago, actually yesterday. And you can see the lagoons receding, getting smaller and smaller. And now it's full of algae and getting pretty warm. And it's just pretty much oscillating with the tide. Oops. San Simeon Creek's doing exactly the same thing. It's drying up, and just it gets bigger and smaller with the tide. This is our San Simeon wells, and you can see that we were really worried right here that the wells were dropping, and they're dropping fast. And due to hopefully a lot, you know, people cutting back on their water use, and also the way we were handling Santa Rosa and San Simeon at the same time, we boosted Santa Rosa. That we flattened it out. We flattened out the curve. And that's what we're trying to do. But we still need to be very careful with it, because we noticed that when we increase the pumping on Santa Rosa, that the creek won't maintain it. We got diminished flows, and we had to shut the thing off. So we can't go 12 hours, only 8 hours a day, and we probably won't be able to go every day. So it is diminishing. Lowest years we've had since we've been recording rain. I just wanted to put that in there to remind everybody that you really have to watch your water. This pine knolls tanks, this was taken yesterday. They're up to the third course, and this is the final course. They were almost on the last weld, and after I left, the steel for the top and the center column was supposed to be delivered. This is inside. This machine right here is set up right now to actually cut the last ring on the top. It actually overlaps, and they're making the cut on both sides of that, and then they'll weld it together, and that'll be the last of that ring. And this is the other side of that machine on the other side, you know, that rolls the metal down. And that's how they put a tank together. That thing just rolls around in a circle, and they just keep going up. This is our site for the press. We ran into a lot of utilities and things in there that we had to move. There's a big duct bank in here. We had to take the duct bank out, pull all the wires out, move the conduits and pull new wires, and because we have some deep excavation going here for a conveyor. And we've already put in the drain lines, the drain pit, and in the next one we've got electrical conduits and telemetry conduits coming in here. Also, we put in a future gas line. Should we put the steam and lime in? So that's in place. And that's it. And I'll just want to remind everybody that to really watch your water supply. Cut back every way you can, because this is the lowest we've seen it at this time and in a long time. And the water in the creek is diminishing a lot faster than we've ever seen before. So I want everybody to have water in October, November, and December, at least till it rains, hopefully in October. On SCADA, we're still working on that. The package hasn't gone out for the actual installation yet, but it should this month. And the contractor, Cybernet, is still trying to get the equipment out and sent up to us. We ran into a few little glitches. And the document imaging, we've had a lot of things to do, so we've kind of put that off. That's not the most important thing in the world, but we've got a couple more classes on that, and we'll be done. And Kathy Choate will be setting that up in the next day or so. And let's see if I got any more here. Yeah, I had a sports injury. Anyway, you get a smile out of him. Nancy Settle reported that the Tri-County Fish Team raised about $45,000 from different agencies to keep it going again. As you remember, Fish and Game kind of dropped the ball on funding them for this year, and kind of an oversight. Hopefully they will do it again, or we can get funding next year. But they have enough money to make it for the year, and they really thanked everybody for helping them out. And that's nice. We'll be able to keep it together for one more year. We also had Jim Kintosh. He gave a recovery update or plan update for Steelhead, and he's pretty astute person on Steelhead and a good advocate for us, for everybody, especially as a kind of a check stop against the feds and things that they might do that seem kind of harebrained at times. And anyway, some of his efforts have really helped out. We had Robin Carlson, and she gave a demonstration on the Cal Fish Passage Database, Assessment Database. And that's an incredible website, and it's at www.calfish.org. And it's a database of all the blockages and well, not all of them yet, but even Caltrans is in there, that were blockages in streams and rivers that inhibit the flow or slow down the flow of steelhead and not only steelhead, but all kinds of fish in California. And if you get a chance, take a look at it. It's an incredible website. A lot of different tools and stuff to use on that, and you can learn a lot more information than just steelhead passage and blockages on streams. But there's a lot of GIS and neat stuff attached to it. That's it. Any questions?
Yes, Brian, you were talking about the water shortage. We still have recycled water available, right?
Oh, yes, we do. Yeah. I should point that out. There's lines out there. San Simeon Creek Road at 1990 San Simeon Creek Road. There's quite a few people out there picking up water in 200 gallons or less. Sometimes there's three or four vehicles stacked up there with 200-gallon tanks and competing with other people with 5-gallon jerry cans. And but there's a lot of people using it, and those are the people that are helping save a lot of the potable water that we have. But it's still there.
I met one of the neighbors up around the tanks and telling me how wonderful the workers are up there. They help them carry their groceries in. They're very kindly and thoughtful, and they're very happy with all the people that are doing that project. So that was good to hear.
Oh, there's some real nice people up there.
Yes.
Sir.
Thank you. No other questions for Brian? Okay, we'll move on to the fire chief's report then. Bob Putney.
Good afternoon, Madam President, members of the board. Again, like everybody else, you have my report in front of you. I'll talk about the high points, especially some of the more important ones. The you notice that we have two open fire investigations. The reason I brought these up is, one, to let you know that we did have a safe 4th of July, but we did have a fireworks-related vegetation fire in the West Village at the county parking lot. Also, we had another fire that was caused by a resident discarding charcoal briquettes that they had not used basically for over a month. They put them out in the backyard, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, they caught fire. Both of these fires burned very well, and they started and continued to burn when we had almost 90% relative humidity. In fact, you could only see about 25 feet down the street. So I know a lot of people think that when we get fog that we get a little bit of respite. Fire still burns in the fog, and the next day when the sun comes up and the wind comes up, it doesn't take long to dry it out. So I just want to make sure that we're water challenged in this community. We don't need a fire to exacerbate that water shortage that we have. So don't let your guard down and think all is well because it's foggy out at night. Things still do burn. In the August meeting, I will have a report, but I'll tell you now because a lot of people have been asking. In the last 10 days, we've had two structure fires in Cambria. And one of them could have been a very devastating fire had it not been for somebody going by seeing that the side of the house was on fire and called right away and used a garden hose to keep it under control. There was a heavily wooded area next to it, and fortunately it didn't spread into the vegetation, and we had just completed a drill, so we had a lot of extra people on staff and got on the fire very quickly. So important time of year for everybody to be fire safe. Moving on, as far as fire hazard fuel reduction and defensible space, on the board meeting today is the final, agenda item to close the fire hazard fuel reduction program. For a lot of local questions here recently, is that the local Cal Fire Station has begun doing what they call their LE or Law Enforcement 100 inspections, which is basically a mirror of what we propose in the defensible space ordinance. A lot of citizens have been calling us and saying that they got a notice to clear, a notice to abate, and we're coming to ask and ask what to do about it. We're not the issuing agency of those inspections. It's California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, or Cal Fire as they're called. They're enforcing current state regulations that are on the books right now, both for vacant parcels and occupied parcels. So if someone gets one of those notices, it is basically a citation. They have 20 to 30 days, depending on what it says, to clear that. Or they have a notice appear and they have to go to court, and it basically goes before a judge. So I know that's caused a lot of confusion. People said we thought the defensible space ordinance proposed here was on hold because all of Cambria is a state responsibility area, or what's called SRA under the California Constitution. Cal Fire has jurisdiction over wildland fire issues in town, as we do. Basically, both of us have equal responsibility under the law, and because this is such a dry year and they've been augmented, as all Cal Fire stations have in the state, with extra staffing, they're taking some of that staffing and doing inspections in Cambria and other staffing and going out Santa Rosa, San Simon Creek Road, Highway 46, Highway 1. So I just want to make sure that's clear to residents and also clear to you also as board members as to what's going on. Carlos, if you could put up that one overhead slide. A couple of high points that I want to talk about real quickly is that as of this is the front copy of a flyer that Cal Fire and the California State Fire Marshal's Office put out. And if you could read the smaller writing, basically it's the Wild Urban Interface Building Standards, the California Building Code. July 1st started the countdown timer for the implementation of the new California Building and Fire Codes. The state is adopting these codes. Every jurisdiction in the state of California either has to If you do nothing, you get the state codes as a minimum. If you want to modify those, then you need to go through a local ordinance, which we will probably be bringing to you in September. There is two big changes that I want to make sure that you and the public that's watching at home can see that are in these codes. The first big change is that since I've been in the fire service, what the result of that was is they went into the international codes, and those are promulgated and come out of the National Fire Protection Association, and they're called the life safety codes. This will be the first year in the state of California that California is not using the model codes as their code base. They will be using the international or life safety fire code, the international building code, and they'll also be using the international electrical code. Over the next 4 years, there will be a planning code, heating, ventilation, air conditioning code, plumbing code, all those will come into fray. That's the first thing. Second thing is that's new this year is that the state of California is doing has in these codes that will be adopted basically a lot of the same regulations that you as a board approved 4 years ago when you did our primary code. They looked at us and a multitude of other agencies. I think there's about 14 to 17 agencies in the state that adopted the wild and urban interface code. The state fire marshal and Cal Fire looked at those and really pushed the legislature and the governor hard to adopt these because they feel that with the growing threat of wildland fires across not only all of California but the western United States, including Texas, that armoring of the buildings, making the exterior of all buildings, sheds, garages, commercial businesses, is essential or we're going to continue to see spiraling loss of life. Loss of people's property and their homes and their businesses, as well as environmental damage. So those are the big changes you're going to see this year in the code. Carlos, if you could put the next one up, please. The next one, that the state fire marshal, who you can see there in the center picture, Kate Dargan, she came to San Luis Obispo County. Tammy, Assistant Chief Miller and I were there. I listened to her speech. She talked about the need to armor buildings in the state of California, the need to expand on defensible space, the need to adopt new codes, and basically she set the stage for the state of California, which was is almost done completing their public hearings on changing the fire hazard severity zones, which is something that the community has been asking a lot of questions about. And I know Kathy did an article in that Tribune, and there's been articles in the New Times and also in the Tribune about the fire hazard severity zones. This is actually a copy of the webpage of Cal Fire. You can go to fire.ca.gov and look at this. If you look up at the top of the right there, you see kind of a yellow tab there that's got some orange and red on it, and that goes to fire hazard severity zones. And those are zones that Cal Fire has proposed. They've been holding public hearings across the state of California. And KDARGAN, those are all acronyms that mean who has responsibility for fire protection and fire life safety standards in sections of California. This map was done regardless of jurisdiction, regardless of who has authority to protect it. It was done for the entire state of California. And this is the first time they did the entire state in one spread, and they used some of the most sophisticated computer modeling, satellite-generated, flyover, and wide array of scientific, insurance, planning, fire behavior specialists, environmental folks, forest managers, stream bed managers, you name it, to put this together. And they have a proposal. I would be lying if I said the entire state of California was very enamored with this and is happy about it. Because the big thing that this fire hazard severity zone proposal has done is it has raised more areas than it has lowered as far as their severity zone. Because the initial one was done with not as strict a parameters that this one has. I want to be quick to point out that this is fire hazard severity zones. This is required by the California Constitution and is a direct responsibility in the Constitution to the Cal Fire. And they have to run this through the Board of Foresters, and there's a process to implement this. And it results in every county in the state having a public hearing. We represented you and the residents here. We had, I believe, about 18 to 20 Cambrians. We were the largest populace of people at the public hearing in San Luis Obispo. We gave our testimony. We showed our map of Cambria, where our current fuels are. And although we don't have the $500,000 that the state has to do mapping, we spend 5 years and a lot of research and brought in a whole team of experts to do our fuel mapping. We submitted it kind of in response to their fire fuel mapping of our area. This fire hazard severity zone takes into account more ember production. And so if you live in an area where you look around, you go, well, there's just grass. But half a mile away from you, there's forested area and canopy. This new fuel model that the state's proposing takes into effect that, and I've told you this a million times, but I'm going to tell you the million and first time, we now have defined science that shows that a lot of the buildings that we lose and a lot of the new fires that start, the Zacka fire is a good example of that in northern Santa Barbara County, these houses, these older buildings, new buildings catch fire because of millions of embers being propagated from the initial fire. They get carried into the air, drop somewhere else, they're still glowing, they start a new fire. So this map takes into consideration that if you're and we won't know what's going to happen with that until basically the latter part of August. The last public hearing will be next Wednesday, July 31st, and then there will be no more public comment throughout the state. They'll take it back to Sacramento, answer all the questions that were proposed, and move forward. So since that's the biggest amount of questions that we've received, I want to make sure that we cover that and talked about that. I'll skip over because this was quite a lengthy thing, but I think it's important that everybody understands it.
Excuse me. We hope
that they will look at the fire hazard severity zones.
I was just going to say, Bob, you didn't comment that one of the reasons people should be aware and interested in this is because of possible insurance increases. Is that the...
Yeah, in the back of my report, you have the letter that I submitted, Chief Miller and I submitted, that went to the state. It was part of our testimony. And one of the concerns we have is that without educating the insurance industry, I would dare guess and say that 75% of the insurance industry today hires an independent firm to do risk analysis for properties they're insuring for tornado, hurricane, tsunami, flood, earthquake, and wildfire, all those catastrophic things. And those people that they have do it often don't have a large level of experience, and they may have no fire understanding at all, especially wildland. So typically they go to Google Earth. If you have parcels near you that have grass or trees, they may recommend to the insurance company that they cancel and basically give you a termination date and stop your insurance, your entire policy, because you're at risk of a wildland fire. Our concern is with these new wildland fire severity zones that without educating and requiring the insurance companies who sell policies in California, without educating if they use this alone as a determining factor, it's flawed because really, when you look at a community for fire risk, you look at three things. You look at the severity of the fuel that exists. You look at the opportunity for wildland fire to start, how many days of weather, how many days do you get low relative humidity, high temperature, what kind of occurrence is there for fire starts, are there normal winds that it may be a wind or slope-driven fire, and then the last thing is what has the community done in mitigation? The fire hazard severity zones only talk about what is basically the severity of the fuel that's out there and how badly would a fire burn. It doesn't talk about the risk, how often you're in that position, nor what a community's done in mitigation. And we asked in our letter that CAL FIRE needs to follow up. This is the only state-mandated program they have. We've asked them, as many other communities have, to create two new ones. What is basically a statewide fire risk map, wildfire risk map, which would then look at those other things not looked at here. I'll quickly follow up and just close this with that we've not heard word yet from, as far as operation goes, from the county health officer regarding our interim paramedic program that we have cooperatively with the healthcare district and the community services district. We've been operating on a temporary basis. A letter was written by us and the healthcare district manager to continue this program in the future, and that's at the discretion of the county health officer. So we are still operating. Our paramedic personnel on the engines are still operating as paramedics, pending that final approval from the county health officer. Last but not least, Carlos, if you put up that last piece of paper, we have a weather station that's up online. The link has not been put on the Cambria CSD website, but it will be there soon. And that is, if you just push that up a little bit, Carlos, so they can see in the bottom, it's fire.cambriacsd.org. That's a live weather station at the Cambria Fire Station. It links online, and it gives every five-minute update as far as what the weather is at the station. And Carlos, if I could ask you one more time to put the last page up, and then I'll answer any questions the board may have. Just the front one there that you have on the top. We also have links on there so people can go to that site and go to any other weather information they want to see. Basically on there it charts all the weather that you see on a daily basis. There's links there. You can see at the very top square, you can see the sunlight and the dark squares. That's the National Weather Service forecast for the next 5 days for Cambria. And then there's links on the side to get the extended forecast for Cambria, Doppler radar, and all the other information on there. We're working with a lot of agencies to make this something that not only we can use for disaster preparedness and emergency planning, but to better understand and capture the weather that occurs in Cambria. Because it's apparent from dealing with CAL FIRE and a lot of the other agencies, they don't have any what we would call reliable weather data for Cambria. They're relying on a remote automated weather station in Big Sur and another one in Vandenberg Air Force Base. They're taking those two and kind of splitting the difference and saying that's Cambria's weather. And that's not efficient, and it really doesn't demonstrate what we have here. So there's handouts in the back if people want to know where that is. And everything else is in my report, so I'll answer any questions.
Lots of information. Any questions for the fire chief? So it looks like you've answered them all for the moment. Bob, thank you. Okay. Finance manager, Alan.
Well, the amount was over $100,000, and that was to CB&I Constructors for the ongoing work with Pine Nose Tank. Last month, I reported on some specific revenue and expenditure projections for the year end. And since that time, there have been no changes to those. We're still paying the last of last year's bills. We don't have final numbers in that area. But in terms of revenue and personnel costs, those pretty much are finalized, and there were no unexpected surprises, be they pleasant or unpleasant, unfortunately, in those. And nothing that I've seen in terms of what we call accounts payable, which are our expenditures other than personnel costs. There have been nothing there that I've seen to this point. And at one point or another, everything crosses my desk in that regard. So, and then on reserves, the balance in the LAIF account as of June 30th, 2007 was $5,374,802. This represents a net decrease of $350,000 from the balance as of May 31st. I do have to amend my report. I had to make another transfer after I wrote this. So I will say an additional $475,000 has been transferred from the LAIF account since June 30th to meet the accounts payable and payroll requirements. And if there's any questions?
Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just back to Fire Chief for a minute. Bob, I wanted to say that I talked to a number of people who attended the meeting where you so diligently tried to get some the state to look at our differing patterns here, and they were very pleased with what you were telling and saying. Okay. That takes care of the staff reports.
I have just a couple of additions, if you don't mind,
okay.
Only because I failed to mention them. You had asked last month with regard, I think it may have been Director Sanders or Coben, about the laundromat. I think there was a public speaker. We are reviewing those surcharges for all the commercial accounts. We pulled up our spreadsheet from the last surcharge period. That's still in review in the next couple of weeks. Ms. Hoban actually showed up today, and we have delivered her the message that within the next couple of weeks, we will talk to her. Okay. There have been a couple of other commercial accounts who have called me, and I've given them that same message just so that they're aware of what their threshold is, and then particularly with the laundromat that we discuss what their threshold will be for surcharges. I also want to clarify earlier when I mentioned the family relief application, everyone got have to do adjustments, and this is something I will change in the next surcharge period so that we don't incur the additional work tasks, okay?
So
again, I want to clarify my previous comment that we encourage everyone to get their applications in by August 31st, so we have that 10-day period to get everybody coded in, but we will accept family relief applications on the September 10th bill up until October 9th, and thereafter, anyone who might come in interim billing periods, it will not apply retroactively, so they have to come in and it has to be done before a billing period. I want to remind people about the voluntary merger program. I forgot to do that, too. We did send a flyer. Why I want to say flowers, I don't know. Flyer out about the voluntary merger program. The CCSD is sponsoring the costs for that program. It's one stop. I am going to report on it probably bi-monthly to you, so I'll give you an update next month on the program. Anyone who is interested can come into our office and get a package from Corey Ryan or anyone at the front desk, and they'll be happy to help you. And there's information also on the CCSD website about the program. And then finally, I passed out to you the first progress report from Joe Lindsay. As required by the action that you took a couple of months ago, you required that the first report be within 90 days. It's actually early. So it was prepared by his architect, Bruce Frazier, on behalf of Joe Lindsay, and I just distributed that so that you each can see that he is working towards his project.
Good.
And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for all those clarifications. And that then concludes the staff reports, right? I'll ask my colleagues, do you feel we should take a break, or should we just go ahead and try to finish
just
this?
Quick
5 minutes?
Five minutes.
Just up and about? Okay, we'll meet again at 10 after. Thank you. Okay, we'll call the meeting to order again and ask the general manager if she would please read the consent agenda.
Okay, item 6A is to approve the expenditures for the month of June 2007. 6B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meetings for June 18th and June 28th, 2007. 6C is to adopt Resolution 54-2007 ratifying the Memorandum of Understanding between the CCSD and the Service Employees International Union Local 620. That's a five-year agreement, by the way. I just want to gloat on that. I think the union this year and staff, management staff did a very good job in the negotiations. 6D, adopt Resolution 55-2007, amending payment and compensation plan for management and confidential employees. And 6A. Okay, item 7A is to introduce Ordinance Number 2-2007, amending the CCSD Code Section 8.04.100A2 and 3, and B1 to include special project area, and I will use the acronym SPA2.
And I'd like to state for the record that I have a conflict of interest because I own property within this area, and because of that, I'm required to state this in the record and actually leave the room.
Oh, dear. Well, that's not good, but okay. Thank you.
And just so everyone knows, I have been working with part of your litigation committee, which is Greg Sanders, on this item, as a result of not having district counsel to consult with. So he is more than likely going to be able to help me with respond to any questions, particularly if they're legally based.
Thank you.
Okay, so as committed, and I can just remind the public and for those who are in attendance today, there are two special project areas of Lodge Hill with special resource protection designation by San Luis Obispo County. SPA 1 involves issues associated with the presence of the rare Monterey pine forest and protection of the forest habitat, and that the issues that are associated with SPA 2 are related to the area's visibility from Highway 1 because of the area's prominent location and lack of screening vegetation, and also both of these areas have steep slopes and high erosion potential. I attached the map that shows both areas. It's pretty much just a topo or map that just shows the different colors, and SPA 1 is in that orange color, and SPA 2, top of the world, is in green. Today, though, however, I passed out and available at the back of the room and in our administrative offices at the CCSD is a better map of Special Projects Area 2 that actually shows, we received the boundaries from the county out of the local coastal plan update, and then we were able to use our consultant from Spacegraph to go in and show better the streets that are involved in SPA 2 and the outlying streets, and then, you know, some of the lot configurations. Obviously, there is a caveat at the top that, you know, not all of the street number, I mean, the house numbers are in this map, but it kind of gives a boundary so that if somebody knows that they, you know, or questions whether they may have their lot in SPA 2, that helps us. Okay, so what happens today, or what we're proposing today, at least to take some public comment, currently the ordinance that we passed out in the agenda package within the code, the CCSD code, prohibits water position transfers into SPA 1. And what your Open Space Committee, your Citizens Committee for the Build-Out Reduction Program, and then your PROS Commission support action items we would take in order to notify the community and those who would be impacted, property owners within SPA 2. And I'm happy and pleased to report that we have complied with each and every one of those actions, and we snuck in a few extra communications to the public, namely a couple of issues of the CCSD newsletter. We put some blurbs in with regard to the upcoming action, and I had opportunities during general manager's reports these past few months to remind the public about those items. One of the common comments that I received from folks who emailed me or called me, first of all, is that I didn't make it clear that if they had a CCSD waitlist position within SPA 2, they're fine. They're okay. Nothing's going to be a problem. They will be able to move forward with their plans when the moratorium is lifted. And I appreciated the fact that the majority of the calls, those people were concerned, hey, how does that impact me? But another common theme that I got with the comments was, okay, but what if those of us who have these CCSD positions within SPA 2 want to transfer to another lot within SPA 2. How does this action prevent us from doing that? And after I thought about it and I discussed it with Director Sanders and some others on staff, it seemed reasonable or amenable that there would be no net gain or loss if those people were allowed to transfer after the effective date of this ordinance. So you'll see that from the first ordinance that I introduced back in 2006 and in the draft that's in your package today, we included another subsection. It's the very last item in your packet. It's subsection C under B1, and we said that, you know, any receiver parcel must be outside of Top of the World Special Project Area 2 to be included as the committees have requested. And the last sentence is that this requirement shall not prohibit transfer exchange of water positions. And then we specifically cited the section 8.04.040A, which is our definition of what allocations are allowed within the CCSD. Mm. So it talks about single-family residential, multifamily residential, et cetera, so that it's specific to anyone who might be holding a slow county growth management position number, so that it's clear that it's only those who have CCSD waitlist positions within this Top of the World SPA 2, provided that the receiver parcel complies with all the CCSD ordinances and policies, therefore making, you know, it they have to comply with the retirement. It has to be more than 3,500 square feet. So we thought that that suggestion was a good one based on the input that I received, w.cambriacsd.org. That is related to Special Project Area 2, and it has the two letters that we sent out to over 300 property owners in SPA 2. It has the action plan. It has the one map that shows both SPAs, and then it's now going to have this new map that we just developed within the past couple of days. And then it shows the proposed ordinance, and then it will show these staff reports as well so that they can follow it electronically if they're not able to attend the meetings. And that's all.
Each time you've brought this up, I must say I've been very impressed with the completeness and the intricacies of this whole process. It's been really something. Any comments from board members?
I just wondered, and it's just a question, whether the additional words we've put in at the end where it says providing the receiver parcel complies with all CCSD ordinances and policies becomes a bit of a circular reasoning.
Where is that, the last?
The very last sentence.
I mean, obviously the intent is to ensure that that receiver parcel has to meet the 3,500 square foot requirement or the street frontage requirement and be outside of SPA 1. So that if anybody's within SPA 2 and wants to transfer to another lot within SPA 2, they can't go over to SPA 1 and retire a lot. And then there may be some other ordinances that, quite frankly, I don't have the code memorized that we're not sure of, but I thought that the language was probably pretty inclusive of anything. And we would be clear.
I thought it was a useful addition because I kind of ended up hanging beforehand.
Yeah. Well, okay. I appreciate Director Sanders for helping me write it.
Yeah, went to school for paid off.
Funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've done the first one. We've introduced it, and now we need to have public comment. I have only one speaker request. I don't know if there are others, but the first one is Greg Whitfield.
I'm Greg Whitfield. I'm a Cambridge resident and also have a real estate license. Represent a number of people that have lots in Special Project Area 2 that aren't fortunate enough to have a CCSD water position. I was requested by one of these clients to read a letter to you. He has a lot on Spencer Street. He says, my wife and I purchased subject lots on Spencer Street in Cambria in 1972. Our intention was to build a future retirement home. Property use would deny us the ability to build on these lots and basically render them worthless. This letter is provided in protest to the proposed restrictions that would apply to our property on Spencer Street in Cambria. After a significant investment over several years, we find it hard to believe that we can lose our property rights due to these locally proposed restrictions. We do not want to get involved with expensive and lengthy legal proceedings if this can be avoided. Therefore, we request your reconsideration of the proposed restrictions that would impact our rights to build on subject lots in the future. And this is by Jeff Schneider. After representing the numerous people in that area, my personal feelings are my understanding is that all CCSD water positions are attached to land right now. And so the question comes up, how many of those positions would you actually think would transfer into Special Projects Area 2? And that's a question that nobody really knows, but I would say few. And so to put this restriction out to people that had land for years, it's insultive to them. And many of them are trying to do what they can do. They're listing their properties for sale, and the client that we're trying to get to buy the property under the way this is proposed, they have to buy the land, say for $25,000, transfer a water position over, and those are listed for $89,000 right now. And that means that you could have a number 500 or number 600 position, which means you could build who knows when. So it's tough to find a buyer that will put money, $100,000, $125,000 out on a lot in which they might be able to build in 20 years. So these people are kind of stuck. And I think that it's they're stuck because I don't understand what the danger is of lots over there will never be built on. And these people need to come to terms with that. You have clients that live next door that have homes that are waiting for this ordinance to pass, in which they realize these lots will be worthless. So then they're offering $3,000 or $5,000 for the lot, which is kind of an insult to them too. So I think that if you left it alone, I think it would take care of itself. I think these CCSD water positions would transfer to the better lots in Cambria, and you guys have your maximum build-out plan. And I think that it would just actually take care of itself. I think you're opening yourself up to a lawsuit, which this client is talking about.
Hi, my name is Lynn Espiriqueta, and I have a property here in Cambria that I recently purchased a couple years ago. Knowing the water situation, really understanding it more today, I am kind of in agreements with Mr. Whitfield, is it? And I just would like to say that ditto everything he just said. I wasn't sure what I was going to say, but he said it best. So I'd just like to say I'm opposed to it also. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there other speakers on this? Okay, we'll close the public comment then and bring it back to the board. Thank you both.
One thing I did fail to mention, too, that I did add to the proposed ordinance, in discussing this with Director Sanders, if you will look on in Section 4, that we extended, even past the adoption of the ordinance date, the folks who may be in escrow, mainly because if someone's just learning about it for the first time today or just hearing about it, even though they've received notices and maybe they haven't paid attention or it hasn't been a level of importance to them, they have an opportunity, even past the effective date of the ordinance until January 2nd, close of business, 2008, if they can come in and prove to me that they're in escrow to purchase a position on the CCSD wait list, then this ordinance won't apply to them. In response to a couple of comments made, at any given time on the MLS, there's about 50 to 60 of these CCSD wait list positions for sale. We keep up with it in our office. We go out and we get the list, and we can see that they're constantly on the market and they're turning over. I know because I sign off on transfer documents every month, 2 to 3 a month. And then within SPA 2, I did put in this report, there are about 50. I think there were 49 property owners within SPA 2 that hold CCSD waitlist position, and that represents about 15% of the SPA 2 property owners. So there, I did check this morning, too, and there's right now 3 of those CCSD waitlist positions for sale within SPA 2. So there are opportunities, and your Citizens Committee for the Build-Out Reduction Program, they're relying on this ordinance or this code amendment, and they also know that there are opportunities for people who don't currently have CCSD water to get CCSD water, and that was another reason why we put that extension of January 2nd, 2008 within the ordinance. Or the code amendment, I should say.
And the range of meters that you see for sale.
Yeah, they're on the market as well.
And again, the reason that we want to have special project area 2 is viewshed protection primarily.
And that is a designation by San Luis Obispo County, not the CCSD.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, board members, what would you? Do you have to,
I'd like to take a stab at responding to Mr. Whitfield. I appreciate where he's coming from. I understand the plight that his client finds himself in, or herself, or them. Is it a couple that own it? Yeah. The reality is, if somebody owns a lot in Cambria today that is not on the CCSD water wait list, let's face it, it's doubtful that they'll ever be able to build on it. What we're doing here, it's not an attempt to stifle property rights or anything like that. It's just kind of looking reality in the eye. And positioning this neighborhood for eligibility for a program that has been run by the State Coastal Conservancy since the mid-80s in partnership with the San Luis Obispo County Coastal Conservancy. The neighborhood will now be eligible for funds for acquisition of lots that wouldn't be available if this special project area was not designated by the CCSD. There are only 2 neighborhoods in Cambria that are eligible for this funding. The first one is Special Projects Area Number 1. That designation was made back in the mid-80s. And this neighborhood, Special Projects Area Number 2. So, in essence, I think it may put your client in a better position, because now, if your client wants to sell, there's a resource that's going to be readily available for your client to sell. So it's a program that's administered by the San Luis Obispo County Land Conservancy using State Coastal Conservancy funds. So in many ways, I think your client is.
Yes.
The price of the CCSD water position is based on supply and demand. And so you have people that have these positions now that are looking at this closely, saying, we have people here that are absolutely going to have to buy a position. Therefore, our price is up here, starting off at $99,000. If you turn this and don't pass this, then those people that have that objective are going to say, wow, we can't sell it to people that want to buy a position in Special Project 2. So therefore, the value may go down. Yeah. But the bottom line in real estate right now is it's very difficult to sell a piece of property with or without a position. Tammy's talking about having many of them in escrow, and I don't know how many she's talking about. I mean, doing a few of them, but it's a very difficult sell, not knowing when you can build. And these people are putting under a time restraint. And yes, you did give them a year, and you did extend it to January. That's great. But I mean, I'm working in real estate, and I know the little number of sales going on in land, it's minimal. So these people are putting into a time restraint, and I think if that was removed, the positions of water possibly would go down, and it would give people that really want to build in the future. Right now, they have to come up with close to $90,000 and get it in escrow by January 2nd, and some people that would love to do that don't have that finance.
Understood. It's just unfortunate that your client didn't get on the CCSD water wait list before it was closed in 1990.
I suspect others could say this more eloquently, but it seems like we've chosen the path to do the build-out reduction plan in order to achieve our objective of obtaining an alternative water source, and we're using that as a mitigation factor. We certainly have published it, and everybody's known that's the path we're on, and it, I think all of us as residents need to begin absorbing the real impact of this, what it's going to do to us when we say no growth. And I'm sure there are people who are going to be caught in loops, but we need to move forward and stay on the path that we're on, I would think. Any other comments? Or
I had a question. SBA 1 came in the mid-80s. This designation is not new, is it, SBA 2? It's no.
I'd say the year was 19, that with the new map.
Okay.
So the next activity is for us to schedule a public hearing. Do we need to have that as a motion?
Yeah,
or is it,
that'd be fine for August 23rd, please.
Okay. Is this second?
I second them. Yes.
Okay. All right. It's been moved and seconded then that we would schedule a public hearing on August 23rd on this activity. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay. Unanimous. Thank you very much, and thank you both. All right. So the next item is...
Item 7B is to conduct the public hearing on parcels that are subject to the fire hazard fuel reduction, to authorize and approve Resolution 53-2007 confirming the fire hazard fuel reduction itemized report, and direct staff to submit the parcel numbers and fees to the Slo County Tax Collector's Office. And I'll turn it over to Bob Putney, Fire Chief.
Thank you, Tammy. Members of the board, before you is the final step in our 2007 fire hazard fuel reduction program. The close of the date that residents had to clear their parcels, there were approximately 200 parcels that had not been fuel modified as was required under the health and safety code. Those went to contract. The district contractor cleared those. Parcels were cleared by the deadline, but were not reported. So our staff had to go on out and inspect them. So there was a charge to do that, a $30 charge, which basically is just cost recovery for time. And then all the parcels that were cleared by the contractor, those charges basically go directly to the property owner and include an administrative charge for us to conduct the prior and final inspection, supervise the contractor's work, inspect afterwards, process all the billing to the finance department, and then create the documents necessary for the tax collector to put it on the tax rolls. So in front of you is all the information. The district clerk has a list of all those parcels that went to contract, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
And we're happy to report that everything got turned in within the time frame that Slo County Tax Assessors asked for. That's the first time since I've been here in 5 years, so that's good news, and appreciate the gallant efforts of the staff at the fire department and in the administrative department, as well as several of his managers.
Lots clear them. So if you're saying done by owner, where the owner does the work themselves, I don't know, it would be less than about 20%.
Yeah. Okay.
There are three contractors in town that do about 75% of the vacant parcel clearing.
But the ones that avoid having to pay the administration fee, in other words, they go ahead and arrange for it to be done themselves, roughly a quarter, 25%.
Yeah, probably even less than that.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, several of those went to contract because they were not done. They cleared the front end of their property but didn't clear the back.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of property owners that don't know where their property legally resides. So they may have cleared their neighbor's parcel and half of theirs. And then we have to go in and we tell them it's not cleared and they don't come back. And we have to send the contractor in to clear what is legally their parcel that they own.
So are you saying that 70-some percent then pay that $400?
No, of the 100% of people that are sent a notice, yes. Less than 20% are cleared by the owners themselves. In other words, they go out and do the work by hand themselves. The majority of those either hire a contractor or it goes to one of three contractors in town that actually clear right around 75% of the parcels in Cambria, either under contract or by agreement from the property owner.
Under contract with the district. Well, do they pay that $400 then?
No, only the parcels that aren't cleared by the deadline that go to contract get the $400 charge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. That's the information, and we need to have a public input. Is that? I have no request for public input. Is that correct? Is anybody in the? No. Okay. We'll bring it back to the board then, and we need to direct the staff to submit all appropriate and required documentation, et cetera.
And then adopt that resolution.
I move the recommended action.
Okay.
I second it.
Okay. Moved in second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Unanimous.
Could I just say I appreciate each year that the fire chief and the folks do this because there's a lot of work before we get to this point.
Right.
And I definitely appreciate that, but I want to share the limelight with all of my staff, including Captain William Hollingsworth, who manages the program. And even though I push him to do more and work harder, he smiles and says, okay, Chief, and he gets it done. So I appreciate him and all of my staff who work hard to get this done.
Thank you. Well, when it goes smoothly, it looks easy, but we all know it takes a lot of effort to get on everybody's part. Yeah. Thanks. All right. So that brings us to agenda item.
Monday, the spreadsheets and all the good financial data that I have to sit with Alan and his staff and review and Brian and go over those numbers. And I want one last opportunity to meet with your ad hoc committee and for utilities and with the executive committee, as I promised. We also have to prepare a mandatory Prop 218 notice to each and every customer so they can see what the impact will be and get an opportunity to know the public hearing date and time and come and share their input as well at that hearing. One final thing is today approving the SEIU agreement, the MOU, and the management confidential amendment. That helps now because I've been able to feed those numbers as well, because the long-term financial management plan is 5 years, and both of these proposals that you approved earlier in the consent agenda are 5 years. So that was really helpful, and she's using that additional data as well, so she has more finite numbers. So we're recommending that the hearing be rescheduled during your regular meeting next month on Thursday, August 23rd at 12:30 here at Vets Hall.
I move the recommended action.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded, but I'd just like to ask one question or make a comment. I assume this is a lengthy agenda item, and is it wise to have it all on the same days with the?
We're going to work and see what other agenda items are going to occur at this meeting, and then we're going to plan around that. So anything that could hold over until September that staff might be working on, we will do that in order to ensure that this very important matter gets the attention it deserves.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's been very difficult, just so the public knows and you know. August is a very busy month with regard to preparation for the Pine Dorado. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a lot of people happy on the Follies and within the Lions Club that I'm not going to use the Vets Hall on August 6th. So after your action today, they will be very happy to not to be interfering with their dress rehearsal. So it's difficult to schedule any other date other than your board meeting, because I have a committed agreement with the Lions Club and the Follies throughout the whole month of August and through Labor Day weekend. So otherwise I push this out into September, and there's some time frames I'm trying to work within for adoption.
Well, all of us who attend will be very happy as well, because the quality has been so high we don't want to take a chance that one missed rehearsal would do something bad to that. At any rate, okay, so all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, motion passes again unanimously. Thank you. Okay, and then we'll move to agenda item number 8A.
Matt,
General Counsel give us an overview of it?
I'd suggest we just postpone it entirely.
All right. Is there any objection to that from other directors?
For public information, that's item 8A, which is to adopt resolution 56-2007 approving the easement agreements and mutual general lease with Wayne and Mady Gracie regarding the Pine Knolls Tanks project.
Okay. And should we move that or do we just accept that? Okay. All right. Thank you. And then the last agenda item.
Okay, the last item is 8B, and this is to adopt the 2008 CCSD regular board meeting schedule. You're probably wondering, why are we seeing this in July? And I've got a couple of really good reasons.
Right.
You typically do this in November, December timeframe, but I've had a request from the Cambria Chamber of Commerce and their annual Allied Arts and Wine Festival. They typically hold this in the last weekend of January, and they've been gnawing at the bit in order to get their notices prepared that we ask you all to change your January meeting date. So I thought, well, if we're going to ask you to change your January meeting date, why not just give you your whole schedule? Because it just makes sense to just tie it all up. And maybe in future years, we might do it a little earlier anyway, and then that way we have the next year dates out there. So you're going to see attached your proposed meeting schedule for January. We're proposing either a Tuesday, which is January 29th, or the week following your regularly scheduled for Thursday, January 31st. And the only other conflicts, of course, in 2008 are your November and December meeting dates with the holiday schedules of Thanksgiving and Christmas. So we're proposing the third Monday in November, which is November 17th, 2008, and the third Monday in December, December 15th, 2008, in order to avoid that. So really the discussion that you should have amongst yourselves is whether you prefer that January meeting date to be Tuesday or Thursday, or you want to stay with your regular scheduled date of January 24th proposed, and I would have to communicate with the Chamber of Commerce something different.
Comments?
I have a conflict with the fourth Thursday in January, and I would very much like it to be moved earlier if that was possible.
Tuesday?
To either
29th.
I want it before the 24th.
I have a conflict with whatever the original one was.
The 24th.
Yeah. I'm away. I go away that day.
And we're proposing after that date, so you're going to be gone even after that date?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so you're going to... So you'd like...
Okay, both those dates look fine. January 15th is a Tuesday, January 17th is a Thursday, and they look okay for Vets Hall.
Yeah. Or Tuesday the 22nd. I'm still here then, but...
Tuesday the 22nd?
So it's whatever.
Hold on one sec.
Yeah,
the 22nd looks fine, too.
Okay.
Well, that'd be more desirable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's closer to the...
Closer to the regular meeting date? Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone is okay with that?
I move we adopt the calendar with the January meeting being on the
22nd.
Yeah. Second that?
Yes.
Okay.
You're good.
I'll second it.
You're good at that.
And so we're going to clarify that on the 22nd, that would be at 12:30, our regularly scheduled time here at Vets Hall.
Okay.
And I'm certain that the Chamber of Commerce and the Allied Arts Wine and Festival folks are really going to be appreciative of that.
And so we have the motion to adopt this amended schedule. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay, unanimous agreement.
Okay, thank you. And then we put at the bottom of that report some future calendar dates with regard to Aqua events and some conferences that are coming up, just for your information that we know today.
Okay, that ends the agenda. I have two requests for public comment. The first one is Steve Cole.
Hi, Steve Cole, Cambria. Question is, does anyone here know when the test lighting will be for our new streetlights? I assume there'll be a brief test.
I have no idea on that one, just before you move on to your next question, but I am in communication with Jim Lopes, who says that they, from Slo County Planning and Development, they are in process of complying with a requirement as part of the project to do that test lighting, and I just don't know the exact date. He hasn't given that to me yet.
And do we know any further range of when the lights might be turned on at all?
I don't.
No. Okay. I'd like to make one comment, though, other than that, is that at the Coastal Commission meeting, our supervisor, Bruce Gibson, did just a superb job of presentations.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Madam President, on the subject of...
...that myself over the years that I'm not going to get the 20 things I want to get done in a day. But I've been inundated by questions about the streetlights. And quite frankly, without just sounding crude about it, you know, it is a Slo County project, and I have deferred most of the emails and the telephone messages to the Slo County and Jim Lopes. But one of the concerns that we have, because we do have a binding agreement that says we would take over the lights... I have requested Jim Lopes that Ben Bohr, our Facilities and Resources Supervisor, be there at the final inspection, and I will ensure the community and you all as the directors that those little banner poles, as they're called, will be all in one direction, which is typically toward the sidewalk, not toward the street. But some people think they should all be toward the street, but I've gotten different variations of that. So whichever way they are suggested to be there for safety, I'm sure, reasons, so they're not hanging out for trucks to hit them and all that good stuff, I'm fully confident that Ben Bohr will represent the CCSD very well during the final inspection. Whether he likes that task or not, I'm sure he has readily accepted it. So
then we need to find some citizen group who would be willing to take on what do we do with those little poles that stick out.
I have actually had two or three requests already wanting to hang banners on it, so we are going to have to figure something out since we'll be in the streetlight business.
Have we got dimensions yet so people know what size the pole? Because that's part of what you're going to do.
Okay. So many groups are interested in it. It's really fun to see that the ideas are flow endlessly. Well, at any rate, okay. The last speaker, then, Bill Allen.
Thank you, Bill Allen. And I just have two questions I'd like to ask. Many years ago, when I got a permit and built my house, the rule was that you had to start building in 6 months or you paid a fee or you could put in a foundation and that would extend it another 6 months. And you could do that several times. I went ahead and built mine then. But I'm wondering, is that still the rule? And if it is, how many times can you extend a building permit?
Let's see. Well, General Manager, staff?
Do you know? I honestly don't know the answer to that question. It's obviously a planning and development question for Slo County, but I'm just looking at Bob. I hate to put you on the spot. Do you know the answer either?
I don't know what the actual time frame that they allow is.
Down their property, mm-hmm. which that happens often.
Yes.
They can rebuild with their active service. Mm-hmm. Bill, I can try to find a staff member to communicate with you.
It's not that important. Don't go into a lot of detail. But if somebody comes up with the answer, I'd like to know just for the heck of it. And the second question is, in September you have a 1 week, a special trash pickup where you can have large items and such. Yesterday I finished taking down a tree trunk in my backyard. And I ended up with, I guess there are 9 or 10 pieces of that trunk that are 10 inches in diameter and maybe 18 to 30 inches in length. Do they qualify for that kind of pickup? And if they do, are they so large that I need to call the company and say, I've got this, so that they would be forewarned?
In my staff report, and if there's not a copy back there, I put Mission Country's phone number. That's a great question for them, and I'm certain that they'll be able to help you.
Yeah.
If you don't get a reasonable response, his name is Frank Silva. He's our local operations supervisor here for Mission Country. Give him a call or let me know, and I'll find an answer for you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's it. Thank you very much.
Seeing no other members of the public who'd like to address us, we'll adjourn the meeting to closed session. Thank you all for coming very much.